This is Ned Ryan, and welcome to the History of the Constitutional Convention, Episode 1. I am convinced that you cannot understand the United States as a nation if you do not understand the Constitution. And you cannot understand the Constitution unless you know the men and the process by which the Constitution came into being. My hope with this series of podcasts is to make the history of the Constitution and the men who helped form it come alive and become real. And hopefully to give those who listen a greater appreciation for what we as a nation have. The Constitutional Convention is the beginning of the story of how a nation was built on the principles of freedom. It's an opening scene of the American saga, in which Americans became the first truly free people in modern times. And it's the amazing story of how a constitution helped a nation rise from being a small agrarian nation on the edge of a Eurocentric world to becoming the greatest nation that the world has ever seen. A nation which empowers its citizens to have the highest standard of living and the greatest amount of freedom in the world. By the time I'm done, I hope that I'll have taken the men who came to Philadelphia, men like James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, James Wilson, Charles Pinckney, Roger Sherman, and dozens of others, from being simply serious faces that stare back at us from the pages of history and make them come alive, show their hopes, their fears, their shortcomings, their own triumphs, and make you, the listener, realize that they saw the same sunrises, woke up early to eat their breakfast, dressed for the day, breathed in the morning air of Philadelphia, and then walked the cobblestone streets to Independence Hall, where they debated complex issues in the process of forming our Constitution. They were not perfect men. They were human beings, with all the frailties and shortcomings inherent in human nature. The convention delegates were a collection of the leading men of their time, some who would become giants of history, men like George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, and James Madison. Others would have their moments on history's stage and then recede from prominence, men like George Wythe and Jacob Broom. Most were creative and passionate men who realized that their nation and independence were in a precarious place, literally teetering on a razor's edge that summer of 1787. Would America become, as Dr. Joseph Warren wrote shortly before the Revolution, a name and praise throughout the entire earth? Or would it become a cautionary tale, a failed experiment in freedom that would be mocked and ridiculed by the world and history? Although it will be hard to cover in total detail everything that took place during the days preceding the convention and all the actual events of the nearly four-month convention, I want to discuss in this series the period of time from the early 1780s through the ratification of the Constitution in the late 1780s to give you a better idea of how this document, called the greatest document that the world has ever seen, came into being. Over the last 220 years, many nations, nations that are considered stable ones, have literally been through dozens of constitutions that same amount of time. But America still operates under the same constitution, with of course some added amendments, that was debated, written, and signed in Philadelphia that summer of 1787. John Adams, away from America at the time of the convention, serving as ambassador to Great Britain, described the Constitutional Convention as the single greatest effort of national deliberation that the world has ever seen. If I can, let me make a small note here. In its time, the Constitutional Convention was known as the Federal Convention or the Grand Convention. There was obviously no Constitution until after the convention was completed, but for the sake of ease in telling of this story, I'll refer to it as the Constitutional Convention. Now, I know I said I would cover primarily the 1780s in this series, but let me digress a few years because the road to Philadelphia and the Constitutional Convention began in earnest when the 13 colonies declared independence from Great Britain in 1776. Now, I have no intention of delving into the American Revolution. That topic is for someone else at some other time, so I'll merely touch on a few points that I believe are necessary to help understand the Constitutional Convention. Between the Declaration of Independence in 1776 and the Treaty of Paris in 1783, the American colonies took on the greatest military power in the world and won their independence quite simply because George Washington and the Continental Army stayed alive. If you look at the Revolutionary War, America only won a handful of major victories. Washington eluded traps, stayed away from the British Army, fighting them when he wanted to, retreating when he needed to, and keeping the conflict going. In the end, the British government and people grew weary of the war and had no will to fight. And after Cornwallis' surrender at Yorktown in 1781, the British government and the British people essentially said, "This is enough. We want the war to end." And there I've just kind of summed up the essence of the Revolutionary War in about two paragraphs. Now, as the war was being fought, the idea occurred to some that there should be a formal joining of the colonies into a more cohesive unit. As early as 1775, Benjamin Franklin was proposing a confederation of the colonies, but the idea of confederation was thought premature until the colonies had actually declared independence from Great Britain. Once that was done on July 2, 1776, almost immediately the debate began on confederation. On July 22, 1776, Congress began to debate a proposal for confederation submitted by a committee chaired by John Dickinson of Pennsylvania. Now, John Dickinson is not as well known today, but back in the 1760s, 70s, and 80s, John Dickinson, a wealthy lawyer trained in England, was one of the most prominent politicians in America due to his widely read Letters from a Pennsylvania Farmer, which was one of the first documents to address the growing tensions between the colonies and Great Britain. Dickinson's committee included Roger Sherman of Connecticut and Sam Adams of Massachusetts. Again, Roger Sherman is not as well known today as Washington or Adams or Jefferson, but Roger Sherman was in his own right a very successful political leader in his time, and was one of only two founders to sign the Articles of Confederation, Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution, the other one being Robert Morris of Pennsylvania. In fact, Sherman was one of the five men on the committee that actually drafted the Declaration. After almost a month of debate in Congress, the Dickinson proposal was printed up for the members of Congress on August 20, 1776, and then essentially the issue of Confederation was dropped. After all the discussion and supposed need for the Confederation of the colonies, the Congress barely debated the issue. Nothing was passed or signed, in many ways due to the fact that there was no real agreement between the states as to what confederation should look like. However, in October of 1777, after the American victory over the British at Saratoga, the idea of confederation became urgent, because suddenly there was felt a very pressing need. If there was to be an alliance with France, which was now very open to the idea after the victory at Saratoga, that actually required a government that possessed the legal authority to enter into such an alliance. Richard Henry Lee of Virginia again proposed the Articles of Confederation, and the issue was taken up in earnest once again. Now, the draft that Dickinson's committee submitted to Congress granted Congress a great deal of power in regards to military and foreign affairs, and it limited, or I should say tried to limit, the state legislatures in some important areas. This issue of state legislatures and the power they held in the newly independent states will play a central role in the debates at the Constitutional Convention, with many of the delegates at the convention feeling that the state legislatures were in many ways responsible for the dire straits the United States found herself in during the mid-1780s. Now, there were four other main issues that the debate revolved around concerning the Articles of Confederation. One was representation in Congress. The Dickinson plan had proposed that each state would receive one vote in Congress, regardless of size. Because the Articles of Confederation were being debated during a time of war, it was decided that it was expedient to give every state, regardless of population, an equal vote. Thus, when the Confederation Congress came together, each state had equal representation. There were 13 states, 13 votes. The equality in voting power for the states, regardless of size, is a very important point to remember when discussing the Constitutional Convention, because it will become a major point of contention during the convention debates. Under the Articles of Confederation, there was only one branch of federal government, the Confederation Congress. It was a unicameral chamber with no House or Senate. There was no executive branch, no judiciary. It was simply the legislative branch under the Articles of Confederation. The large states resented this idea of equal representation and would argue that representation should be proportional, based on wealth or population. But the large states lost the debate, due in large part to the fact that certain states would have rejected Confederation based on that issue, and so Congress adopted the one-vote rule for every state. I cannot stress enough how important an issue this idea of representation would be at the Constitutional Convention. At the convention, the large states would take up this issue once again and demand that representation in a national government be proportional. The issue of representation would be one of the key and almost deal-breaking issues at the convention. Another of the issues debated was this issue of taxation. Samuel Chase of Maryland proposed that the slaves should be excluded from the taxation allocation formula, which was adamantly opposed by John Adams of Massachusetts and James Wilson of Pennsylvania. However, the southern states threatened that if the slaves were not treated as property, that would be the end of Confederation. It is interesting to note that much of the heated debates over the Articles and during the convention would come from the smaller southern states. In many ways, they wanted it all. They wanted to be treated the same and be on equal footing as much larger states like Virginia. And at the same time, they wanted their slaves treated as property until it came to representation, and then they wanted them counted as full citizens to leverage themselves into a more powerful place on the national scene. The issue of representation in the slaves will be a topic I will discuss in much more detail in a later podcast. Now, the Dickinson Plan also proposed letting Congress fix the limits on state lines. Some states had western claims that extended all the way to the South Sea, which I presume means the Pacific, and states like Virginia were adamantly opposed to the idea of Congress fixing their state limits. Sovereignty. Thomas Burke of North Carolina successfully added a provision to the Articles that preserved state sovereignty and retained for the states all the powers not expressly delegated to the national government. This is a very important point to remember because the idea of state sovereignty would actually ultimately lead to the demise of the Articles and the formation of the Constitution. Under the Articles, it was the state legislatures that had the real power, not Congress. James Madison considered equal representation in Congress and the power of the state legislatures as great evils, and those issues were in many ways the motivating factors for men like Madison and Alexander Hamilton in calling for the Constitutional Convention and a new form of government. Now, it may seem that as I've just breezed through the debates over the Articles, that it was indeed a short debate. It wasn't. By July of 1778, most of the states had agreed to ratify the Articles. But it would take almost another 3 years before Maryland became the last state to ratify the Articles in 1781 and make them unanimous. What's ironic is that the Articles were finally ratified in March of 1781. Yorktown was in October of 1781. So essentially, the entire Revolution was fought under a gentleman's agreement between the states. There was no governing document until 7 months before the cessation of armed hostilities with Great Britain. From its inception, the Articles proved to be a weak form of government. Each state, governing itself through elected state representatives, who in turn elected the national government, meant the national government was at the mercy of state legislatures. Again, remember this point, under the Articles of Confederation, the true political power lay not with the national government, but with the individual state legislatures, who were, quite frankly, looking out for their own state interests. The real power at the time was with the states. The Confederation Congress lacked the authority to impose taxes to cover national debt, and because all 13 states had to ratify amendments, one state's refusal could prevent any amendment. In 1786, 12 states actually voted to give Congress the power to tax imports, only to see New York veto the measure. Summing up the attitudes towards New York, it was said that every good liberal man is wishing New York in hell. 9 of 13 states were required to approve important legislation under the Articles, meaning that a minority of states could halt any major proposal. And though Congress could negotiate treaties with foreign nations, the states were the ones that actually had to ratify those treaties. Under the Articles of Confederation, it can be said that the 13 state legislatures truly ran the newly independent United States. Next week, I'll continue on this topic of the Articles' deficiencies and the events leading up to the convention in Philadelphia.